I'm Dr. Al Sparrow, a pediatric cardiologist, interviewing Dr. George Eyster, a cardiac surgeon from the College of Veterinary Medicine, with whom I've had the pleasure of working for many years. We will begin the interview now, George, if you're ready.
Yeah.
I wanted to start with your early years. I knew you grew up in Maryland, as did I, but I was in the big city of Baltimore, and you were somewhere out in Emmitsburg or wherever it was, on a farm, I believe.
Yeah.
How did those early days influence your decision-making in terms of career, George?
Well, I lived across, so I grew up on a farm. I lived across the road from a veterinarian and worked with him, and the most enjoyable part of it was surgery, which I was able to assist in occasionally. And so that started me on a career. I planned to be a large animal veterinarian, and that changed in between my sophomore and junior year at the University of Pennsylvania, when I spent the summer in a program at NIH in Bethesda, Maryland. This was in 1962, and we were doing cutting-edge work in heart and kidneys. It was a summer program. There were 50 medical students, 5 dental students, and 3 veterinary students. And I'm convinced that the veterinary students had the best program, because we were in the surgery lab with people doing experimental surgery that was absolutely cutting edge, kidney transplants and heart procedures, and that just turned me on.
So tell me about the evolution of your coming to the Michigan area from Philadelphia. I assume that was a direct shot. And how and why did you come here?
Well, after the NIH, I decided I wanted a career in academic medicine, or at least cardiovascular research. And in 1964, this was pretty pathetic, as you know, in cardiovascular surgery, and it was just basically not done in veterinary medicine. My mentor at Pennsylvania, an MSU grad, Jim Buchanan, was about the only person in perhaps the world doing any kind of cardiac surgery in veterinary medicine. And he encouraged me to come to Michigan State, a move that I'll never regret.
So you came here as the only surgeon, or was Dr. Buchanan here at the time?
No, Buchanan was at Pennsylvania. He's recently retired, stayed there his whole career.
So it was just you in CVM and all by yourself. What did you think about, and how did you go about doing what you've done?
Well, I was fortunate that I had some excellent mentors here at Michigan State. Wade Brinker was, I think, the finest orthopedic surgeon I've ever seen operate, certainly in veterinary medicine. And my boss, Bob Shermer, who did all the cardiovascular work, limited that it was, wanted me to take that area over. And so we did. And my research was to develop open-heart surgery for veterinary medicine. There was a smattering of this being done mostly in medical research areas, but nothing in veterinary medicine. And the breakthrough came in about 1963 or 4, when Denton Cooley in Texas discovered that you could do open-heart surgery in people without using blood in the heart-lung machine. This was a breakthrough because of blood incompatibilities in dogs. And shortly thereafter, disposable plastic oxygenators were developed. Basically saline solutions were used to prime the heart-lung machine. So we built our own machine or control system, got a finger pump, terribly loud and horrible thing, and the disposable oxygenators, and we did the first clinical open-heart surgery in veterinary medicine here in about 1966.
Wow. And if that, this was an open-heart procedure, you said, was that a first for the state?
There may have been one clinical case done in New York in a dog at a human hospital before that. But certainly this was the first in this country done in a veterinary hospital by veterinarians. And perhaps with the possible exception of the Japanese, we may have done the first clinical case in the world. Fortuitously, at the same time, Art Stanley was interested in turning Ingham Medical, which was a TB hospital, into a first-class surgical facility and emphasizing cardiology. And they were working, Dr. Stanley, Dr. Chi, Dr. Blair, in trying to develop open-heart surgery, and they were using dogs in the dog lab and the basement of the old hospital at Ingham. And so they were trying to develop these procedures and learn how to do open-heart surgery at the same time we were. And so we kind of hooked up, and we helped in the lab, and we learned from them, and I think they learned from us. Certainly they learned things about how to anesthetize and operate on dogs. In the late 1960s, we were in the process of learning to do open-heart surgery on dogs and learning how to repair the more simple inner cardiac defects.
I remember some of the research in the basement lab, as you talked about, and some of the things that were going on when I got here. But I also remember some stories about sometimes using upstairs labs for your dogs. Do you remember anything like that?
The first cardiac catheterization ever performed in the Lansing area was on a cat in the upstairs lab, and
the upstairs lab being the human lab.
They moved the people out for the cat, and I'm sure that they'd probably close the hospital down if someone thought they were doing that. But in those days, we could get away with a lot of things that they would never allow today.
You mentioned your growth in terms of procedures and development in the middle and late 60s, and being one of the first in the state particularly. Did you get referrals immediately? Were you overwhelmed with animals that needed your services at that time?
I don't think we ever got overwhelmed, but we were the only place in the country that were doing these kind of things. So we got stuff from the West Coast and the East Coast and the South, and there weren't a lot of cases, and certainly there were cases that could have been done, but the finances, as you well know, to do open heart surgery, it's expensive. And we'll maybe talk later about why it's being less done today. And it's a matter of finance. I had offers to from Europe to bring animals here, and even where we had requests to go to Japan to repair defects. The major cost And at that time, the high mortality, although it was workable, but the cost to the clients prevented us from being overwhelmed with these defects. And, you know, it was so much easier to just put the animal to sleep.
Sure, I understand. Let's go back. You said one of the turning points in your ability to perform these procedures was the ability to pump the prime the pump with saline. Wasn't that kind of dangerous, and did you lose any animals in the process of developing that procedure?
Actually, the development occurred because of the Seventh-day Adventists that don't get transfusions, and it was a born out of necessity in people. And so I think the first times were done in people, and then it was moved to the surgery lab.
And that was a hallmark for your ability to
that opened it up for us because of dog blood incompatibilities. It's much more difficult than it is in humans.
Tell me how the clinical program continued to develop in the 70s, and were you able to do more and more procedures, more complicated procedures, and how did things go in the 70s and 80s?
The collaboration with the people at Ingham was critical for us. You've mentioned in the past the importance of anesthesia, and we were fortunate to get Bob Whipple, but then Tom Evans, both veterinary anesthesiologists, were absolutely critical to the development of the open heart surgery. It is so much more complicated and so much more difficult to anesthetize those patients. And with some advice and help from Dr. Mark Hirt at Ingham, Tom Evans was trained, and he was perhaps the single most important factor in us being successful, being able to do the anesthesia. At the same time, we were helpful to the people at Ingham because we knew how to anesthetize dogs. And so we developed what we called the Ingham program, where twice a week very select group of veterinary students would take a research dog down to Ingham Hospital. And after the initial areas where we learned how to do some of these things, assisted the residents in their training. And this went on for almost 10 years where our students did the anesthesia, assisted one of the resident surgeons in their training and learning how to do the more technically difficult cardiac procedures. These students were worked with us at the veterinary school. So we had veterinary students that were familiar with open heart procedures, and they became a backup for us in our lab. Supplied the additional help that is necessary, as you know, the personnel for successful heart surgery.
Tell us a little bit about your program in veterinary cardiac surgery and how it affected the veterinary medical school and its programs.
As I said, we were the first and for a long time the only program that was doing open heart surgery. So we got a lot of people coming in to learn from us, spend some time with us, and eventually some of them went back and set up programs of their own. None of these programs exist today, and perhaps we'll talk about some of those aspects of why. The students that worked in our program went into a variety of areas. Over that 10 years, there were about 150, 170 students that spent time in our lab and in the Ingham lab. And they went on to be successful practitioners and surgeons and did heart surgery or at least thoracic surgery in their practices, which at the time was very unusual. Some of them stayed in academia. Dr. Laurel Anderson is an example here at MSU. Some of them became boarded in surgery, anesthesia, became deans and department chairs. Four of them, I think, basically out of their experience, left veterinary medicine and went to medical school and continued as, in many cases, surgeons. Well, in all cases, surgeons. One, Jim Buck, chaired the Department of Pediatric Surgery at Johns Hopkins. One, John Weigeld, became the emergency surgeon travels with the President of the United States when the President's out of the country. And John's the chief of surgery in Milwaukee, and he's received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest medal that's given to civilians. These students had a terrific advantage in the fact that they had so many, such outstanding experience and opportunity to do surgery.
It sounds like you've had many, many satisfactions as a result of your program and your students coming through and going on to these wonderful attainments. Would you mention any disappointments that you've had, things that maybe have not made you happy?
I think the biggest disappointment was the fact that today open heart surgery and veterinary medicine is not it's rarely performed. Of all the programs that started up, and some were reasonably successful for a period of time, the only one in existence today is here at Michigan State. And that's headed up by Dr. Augusta Pelosi. The main reason is economics. When oxygenators move from the disposable bubble oxygenator where oxygen bubbled right into the blood to the membrane oxygenators, the cost went from $150 to $1,000 just for that one piece of disposable equipment. That limited the availability for clients to pay for the surgery. As a physician, you know what it costs. If I told you what it cost us to do the surgery in the early days, you'd be astounded. We could do it for pennies on the dollar for today.
I think I recall you using some of our used equipment to help ease the burden of your cost.
Always we reused equipment. On the clinic patients, we always use new, unused equipment. But when AIDS came in, everything went into a disposable bag. The instruments, even the suction heads, were plastic and disposable. Whereas before, they'd be stainless steel and you'd and be reused. So the cost went up. And the other factor that that basically made it difficult to do was the animal rights movement that has persisted and grown in its ability to control the use of dogs, particularly for experiments. It's for whatever you feel about animal use, has cost veterinary medicine dearly in our ability to develop new techniques in surgery. And in fact, I believe it's also cost in human life.
That's tragic. I did not know that clinical veterinary cardiac surgery was at such a minimal activity across the country. And how has it been able to survive here, and will it continue to survive here?
I think it's survived because of our history. I think it will continue to survive because Dr. Pelosi is one dedicated and very talented surgeon, and she is developing the skills to repair the damaged mitral valve. As you know, the replacement of the valve was the mainstay of repair for valvular disease. But replacement valves have major problems, long-term problems, as well as high cost. Today, in human medicine, the preferred treatment is repair. It's really artwork. It's much harder to do than for example, replacing the mitral valve with a prosthetic valve. It's a, as I say, it's artwork. It's a skill that is learned. And you improvise through the procedure. Mitral valve disease affects one out of every 12 dogs over 5 years of age. And so there's a huge potential market for valve repair. We did, along with the people in Ingham, the first valve replacement ever performed on a dog. The dog lived for several years after the valve replaced. But valve replacement was never very successful in veterinary medicine because of the complications, the postoperative complications associated with mechanical valves. They tend to form clots, and the aftercare is continuous and was never. Never a very viable option, but repair under Dr. Pelosi will one present significant enough cases with clients that have sufficient funds to make it go.
So indeed, is HERS your former program the only active program in the country now?
There was a program at Colorado that was certainly successful, but that's out. They are trying to develop a program in California. There was a program in Texas that was funded by donations or philanthropic support by Michael DeBakey, the prominent human cardiac surgeon, but that program is no longer functioning. So from a realistic point of view, the only one is here at Michigan State.
How does that make you feel?
Well, I feel like I've contributed something to the profession, and you know, we did some very interesting things. We did numerous firsts for veterinary medicine, and I think we brought some prestige to the college.
I think you did too, George. It's certainly a tribute to you what's happened there in vet med, and how we were able to work together in human med as well. I'm indebted to you also as a colleague and a friend, and enjoyed this interview. Hope you did too.
Yeah, no, that's thank you. Certainly one of the more enjoyable things in my career was the relationship that we had with the program that you had at Ingham Medical.
If you were just coming off the farm in Maryland, would you do it any differently?
Wouldn't change a thing.
Wonderful.